All right, morning everyone.
I'm going to be talking about how you can actually build robust applications in Windows Azure using some guidance from Patterns and Practices Group, some guidance from them. Now, before I get going, I want to talk about a couple of scenarios that may be relevant to the topic today. The first one is, the recently concluded Olympics. Olympics actually happens once in 4 years. And the interesting thing is that you get lots of traffic going to any site that actually hosts the Olympics, like 5 weeks in every 4 years. Now, in those 5 weeks, the traffic to the site is going to be massive. And then the rest of the time, you're going to have some traffic coming through, but it's not going to be a lot. It's going to be a lot just in those 4 or 5 weeks. This pattern is, you can actually see this in other sporting sites as well, like, even if you've got a footy site or a cricket site, just before the game, there's a lot of traffic. During the game, there's a lot of traffic. And after the game, maybe even the next day and so on, people are going in, checking to see what happened, reading about it and so on and so forth. And then during the rest of the week, there's not much happening at all. So if you're building an application, one of the great benefits of moving to the cloud is some of the cost savings that you can actually get. So when you're moving your application to the cloud, you can actually start thinking about, hey, I don't want to build an application that is like catering for all the peak traffic all the time. And we'll see how we can actually do that in this talk. Another great thing about the cloud is, when you actually, the cost saving that you actually get, right, is enabled mainly because you run in a multi-tenanted kind of environment. You're basically sharing resources, and that's what makes it possible. The lower cost is, there are two things that contribute to lower cost. One is the economy of scale because lots of people are in it. And the other thing is because you're using shared resources. It's all running in a virtualized environment, and you're sharing CPU usage, you're sharing memory, you're sharing some storage space. And but there are some problems that come along with it as well. There's a cost you pay for it. Chances are that when multiple applications are fighting for the same resources, and chances are that when some of this actually happens, something may actually go wrong. And you want to make your applications really resilient so that when something actually goes wrong, it kind of gets out of it in a very elegant fashion. So you do retries and things like that. So in my talk today, I'll cover these scenarios and how you can actually handle them with some guidance from the Patterns and Practices Group. So the agenda is basically quite simple. I'm going to be talking about scaling. More importantly, I'm going to be talking about auto-scaling, how you can actually implement that. I'm going to be talking about an application block that's put out by the Patterns and Practices team. It's called Windows Azure Scaling Application Block, or WASABI. WASABI is actually like a really cool name, I think. But I think they thought of the name first and said, oh, what are you going to do with the I? Maybe we'll add an infrastructure or something to it. I think it's Meta. But anyway, I digress. I'm also going to be talking about transient errors, these errors that I was actually talking about when different applications are fighting for resources and something actually goes wrong. It's a temporary thing. And the chances are when you try again, it's going to go away. So there's an application block that the Patterns and Practices Group have put out to handle those scenarios. It's called the Transient Fault Handling Application Block. Again, it's a bit of a mouthful, so I'll refer to it as Topaz as we go along. Okay, now, before we get going, there are a couple of assumptions I'm actually making. Now, how many of you are using Windows Azure today? Thinking about moving to Windows Azure? Okay, cool. There's a basic assumption. I am going to assume that you guys know Windows Azure and terminologies and things like that. I'm going to say things like cloud service or SQL database or SQL Azure and things like that. So I'm not going to give you an introduction to any of those things. So I'm going to assume that you already know all those things. One of the great benefits of the cloud is, as I said earlier, the cost savings. They're twofold, right? There's basically zero or low upfront cost. So you don't have to pay for it. If you're a startup, it's great. You don't have to go ahead and pay for buy services for buy servers and so on, and you don't even know how many users you're going to get up from. And there's also this low ongoing cost. You basically pay by the hour in Azure. And that's pretty cool. You don't have to, you basically just spend enough. And you also have this seemingly infinite resource at your disposal. If you want a server to be commissioned, if you want to provision a new server, it's almost like a click of a button or something where you can just go and provision yourself another server. A new instance, no problem. I've got a story with this. One of the customers that if you're working in the corporate world, right, and you probably know how difficult sometimes it is to get an additional server or something put in place. You know, you probably raise a change request, and you know, a couple of months later, you're still waiting for it because they've got some issues. They're basically saying, "Hey, you know, we want to put in a SAN to go along with it, and then there's you know backup that we need to worry about, and you know all that kind of stuff." True story. I worked for a company, and when we actually requested for a service, they actually said they couldn't do it because of weight problem. I said, "What do you mean by weight problem?" It turns out, right, this was actually sitting in the fourth floor of a building. And they had packed it with so many servers that literally the structural engineers of the building had to come in if extra servers need to be put in. I mean, that's not an everyday problem, but you know, you've got to reckon with things like that. But in the cloud, you don't have any of those things. I mean, if you want a resource, you know, you've got a seemingly infinite... that's gone further. You got this seemingly infinite resources at your disposal. And more importantly, right, I mean, you can basically provision these services when you want them. Like I said, these things are available by the hour, and you know, if your business grows really fast, or if the traffic to your sites basically starts, you know, you get a spike of traffic, you know, the /.fic or something that happens, and a lot of traffic comes to your site, you can basically provision more service during the time. And when the traffic dies down, you can basically cut back if you wanted to. This is the whole concept of elasticity on demand. So what is scaling? Well, if you have infinite resource, infinite budget, you can set up as much service as you want, not worry about scaling at all. Scaling is all about balancing your running costs with load and performance. I mean, if I had like a, you know, if I had like an infinite budget, I'll set up like 100 servers for my blog and not worry about it. I mean, in the real world, that doesn't happen at all. So you've got a budget to play with, and you just provision enough servers to cater for the traffic. And when the load goes up, you provision more servers, and the load goes down, you take them away. So there are two ways in which you can actually scale. You can basically scale vertically, which basically means this is a scale up and scale down. In Azure, you have 5 instance sizes. You have all the way from extra small to extra large. And each one of these sizes come with certain amount of, you know, certain amount of RAM, certain amount of resources. Your CPU speed is different. The number of cores is different. So you get a whole bunch of things within each and every one of these, each and one of these VM sizes. But if you want to get true elasticity on demand, you need to go to horizontal scaling, which is basically scale out, provision more and more of these servers. And that's when you can really scale out. I mean, that's when you can take, that's the true elasticity on demand I'm talking about. You can do manual scaling. If you go over to the new management portal for Azure, there's a little slider in one of the tabs. You can go in and kind of like increase that to increase the number of instances. And that just works. Now, to give you an example, I've done some consulting work for a university that has a student portal running in the cloud. And if you look at the pattern of usage, the students come in the morning, and they all log in at around 8:30 or something in the morning. And there's a massive amount of traffic during the day. And at 5 o'clock, nothing. It trickles next to nothing. At 5 o'clock, there are probably some people logging in here and there. And you look at the usage pattern, right, Monday to Friday, 8:30 or 8 o'clock to 5 p.m., all the traffic and then nothing. It's about, what, 9 hours or something in a day? 9 out of 24 hours, you get lots of hits and then nothing after that. So, you know, this one-off scenario for Olympics where you go in and just before the Olympics you actually scale up and you can scale down, doesn't work in that scenario. You can't have someone go in the morning and just do that and then, you know, as he goes home, kind of like scales it down. And as we all know, you know, humans make mistakes. So there are again two kinds of scaling, types in which you can actually scale. You can be proactive about it. You know the scenario I was talking about, the university or the Olympic site and so on. You can be proactive and then set these things up. The first thing, of course, you want to do is you want to make this automatic, right? Rather than let a human do it, you let the machine do all the work for you, or your program do all the work for you. And the other thing is, you've got to set it up in such a way that it's proactive. So you know that, hey, I know between 8 to 5 p.m. all the traffic is up. Just before that happens, you go and increase the number of instances. And even the units, the example I gave you, you know, there are some variations. It's like nine, it's like 8 to 5. And then they have a lot of people checking in when the exam results are announced. There's a lot of people coming to the site and looking for things. And the semester begins again, a lot of people signing into the site. You can still be proactive about it, because if you look at throughout the year, there's a pattern. It's a very consistent pattern, and you can actually follow it and set it up. I've also done some work for a travel site. They basically sell flight tickets. And again, there's a very consistent pattern in usage. It's not 9 to 5. It's basically, you know, a lot of traffic. There's some traffic that actually peaks around lunchtime, but most of the sales happens outside of work hours. So again, it's a very consistent pattern. You go in and you look at the usage and so on their site, and you can actually work out, hey, I need to scale up servers during these times and so on. This actually goes for, they've got some variations, you know, different periods during the year, you know, traffic goes up and they can cater for that as well. But then sometimes there's unannounced sale that actually goes on, something that they haven't predicted at all. The airline basically goes ahead and says, hey, you know what? We're going to offer cheap tickets starting midnight today. And suddenly the traffic spikes in the site. Now, this is the time where you want to make the most out of it, right? You want all their money. So you can't turn away customers at this point in time. So you've got to be reactive as well. So you've got to react to some changes. So you look at the load that's happening on the server, number of connections that are coming through, or you know the CPU load, and then say, hey, you know what? I think you know, I've reached the threshold, like my 80% of CPU in all my instances. I think I need to spin up another one, or maybe two. So that's the reactive bit. So I went in and said, well, you know, to do this, what is my wish list? What are the things that I want to, you know, what should my application really do? The first thing that I thought was, you know what, it should be built into the Azure platform itself. So, you know, it's provided, maybe it's a tab over there, and I go in and I tweak it and, you know, adjust some settings, and it just does the work for it. Unfortunately, that's not the case, so I basically struck that out. So the other things that I wanted is, like, I wanted to run on a timetable. So the example about the university or, you know, the travel site and so on and so forth, there's a timetable that I can actually work to. So it would be really nice if I could basically go in and say, hey, you know, between 9 and 5 p.m. every day, I wanted to scale up, and then I want to use so many instances. During other times, you know, I want to use this number of instances. I also wanted to scale out and scale in based on performance counters and queue sizes. And a heap of other things, you know, particularly performance counters. So I can go in and say, hey, there's a lot of CPU being used. I want to scale out. I also wanted to work within my SLAs. So, you know, I don't want it to go below a certain threshold. And at the same time, I don't want it to break the bank as well. So I'm working within a certain budget. You know, there's more and more traffic coming to my site. I don't want it to basically go and say, hey, well, keep increasing the instances. And then finally, you know, I'm paying everything out of my pocket. So you basically, you know, you could have a scenario where it's perfectly acceptable to turn down customers or people coming to your site. I also want to make sure that I don't need to make changes in the code every time I'm changing the number of instances, or, you know, change the rules. The one thing that I want to do is once I spun it all up, I want to observe how it's all working together and make tweaks to the number of instances and things like that. So I don't want to go and change it in code and redeploy my application or something like that to cater for that. So when, you know, I said I wanted to work within a budget, right? But what I want to do is, if I've used up all my instances and so on, I want to start cutting back on some of the features that are given to people. Things that are running in the background, like high-end CPU tasks, you know, CPU-intensive tasks. Or, you know, I can basically say, you know what? My application actually spins up videos for people. Okay, there's a section that actually, you know, you can go and look for free, and the others that actually cater for people who subscribe to it. I can cut down the features, you know, the free videos, as an example, so that I can cater to all the people who actually paid up. So I can do all kinds of stuff. I want to make use of my billing cycles. Now, I'm not sure whether you know, in Azure, everything is charged by the hour. But if you actually shut down your instance at like 10:05, you're still paying for the whole hour. Maybe I'm greedy, right? But I just want to make full value for my 12 cents or 25 cents or whatever it is. So I want to make optimal use of those billing cycles as well. So I mean, you know, rather than shutting it at 10:05, hey, why don't shut it at 10:55? So I've got another instance running for that time. And I still want to, you know, preferably host it in a worker role in Azure, so I don't have to worry about, you know, looking after it or hosting it and things like that. So if that's available, that would be great as well. And last but not the least, I may have multiple roles running. So I don't want to create an application that manages each and every one of them. Because there's one item that I actually didn't mention in the slide. I want to make as little of changes as possible to my application as well. So there are ways in which you can actually achieve this. I mean, you can go over to software as a service provider and say, hey, you know what? This is the stuff that I wanted to do. And yeah, they manage it for you. You go give them your management certificate and things like that. And they've got like their own portal where you go and tweak all the settings. And everything just works. Someone like Azure Watch is an example of someone. I haven't looked at Azure Watch in a while. I think I looked at them about a year ago. But you know, there are other providers as well who would provide the service for you. You can build your own, but you know, that's like really no value. You're better off building an application that provides business value and not working on, you know, scaling your application, spending all the time doing it. The last option, of course, is to use something that's already available out there, and it's free as well. So the Patterns and Practices group have put up a lot of guidance on how this can actually be done. And they've got an application block, which is part of the enterprise library framework, and that you can actually basically plug in and start using it. So some of the features of the Wasabi framework is, you know, it supports auto-scaling of instances. So, you know, you can basically scale these instances up, out and in, basically add them and reduce them quite easily. And it also has the throttling feature I was telling you about. So, you know, for example, if you want to cut down some of those features because for whatever reason, you can start doing that. It also has options where it can be reactive or proactive. You know, I was talking about these timetables and all those rules and so on. So that's how you can be proactive and do it. At the same time, I want to start looking at performance counters and be reactive as well. So it allows you to do that. And it provides you to a number of hosting options. But you know, you can even host it on a console app. But you know, you're probably thinking it should probably be in a worker role. Installation is quite simple. You go over to the NuGet console and basically type in install package enterprise library Windows Azure auto scaling, and that will basically download everything for you. Now, if you who's worked with Entlib before, anyone? Okay. If you work with Entlib, it's kind of like a bit of a nightmare working with the configuration files. So you're better off using the Entlib configuration editor. So you know, just download that. Although you can go and hand code everything yourself, you're better off downloading the enterprise library configuration editor and using that. In addition to that, you need to work with a number of configuration settings. The first thing is, of course, you know, the app.config file is where Entlib would go and modify those things. So that's taken care of. In addition, there are two sets of configuration you need to worry about. The first one is the service configuration, which says, hey, what is the subscription ID that you're using? What is the storage account that you're using? And heaps of other settings. So you go and configure all that. Once you do that, there's another configuration that you need to do, which is all the rules that you need to set up so you know your application can scale reactively or proactively and things like that. Of course, you know, you can store them in files, but you know, I recommend putting it in blobs. If you're putting it in a file and then deploying it as a worker role, then you have to redeploy your application every time you actually change the file itself. So you know, it's preferable to actually store it in a blob. So changes in code, it's pretty simple. There's really four lines of code that you need to write. You basically initialize an autoscaler object, and you basically declare it, create it, and then you basically say start. Okay, and of course, you know, you can stop it as well. It's pretty straightforward. Four lines of code, that's it, done. You can all go home now. Yeah, well, not quite. There's a lot of configuration, though. And so, you know, all the complication, it's pretty straightforward, but the complexity is actually in the configuration. So, for proactive scaling, there are a bunch of rules that you actually set. They're called constraint rules. And they've got this, you can set a timetable. And in a timetable, you can basically say, hey, I want to set it every day, or I want to set it from Monday to Friday. You can go ahead and set all those things. And you can also set budget limits. You know, I was talking about, please do not deploy more than 6 instances because I can't afford it. At the same time, you can also set some values that will fit in with your SLAs. So one thing to note over here is that you can basically have your constraint rules, and then you can also have your reactive rules. Now, constraint rules will always overwrite your reactive rules. Because in your reactive rules, you can say, hey, you know, my threshold is 80% CPU. Can you please add another CPU, another instance? Can you please add another instance? Can you please add another instance? But then, you know, you can only afford like 6 instances, right? So if you set it up in your constraint rule saying, hey, the maximum number of instances that I can actually afford is like is 6, it won't go beyond that. That's how your constraint rules looks like. Pretty straightforward, but I'll actually explain this. Each, you know, you specify a rule and you can give it a name, and there's also a description that you can provide, and there's a rank over here. And then you say what action that you want to specify. That is the target role that you're resizing, or you know, that you're setting the rule for. And it basically says the min is your SLA, kind of like caters for SLA. Say, well, please do not go below 2 instances. And the max kind of like caters for your budget, I guess. So it says don't go beyond 6 instances. Now, notice that I've got 2 rules over here. And there's a rank. So although you can have multiple ranks, and when there's a when there's conflicting rules, then the rank takes precedence. You can also set action. You can say you can declare a timetable over here, and then say, hey, you know, between 8 a.m. for a duration of 8 hours with this time offset, UTC offset, I want this to be, I want to use, and you specify the action over here. So you can specify a range over here that says minimum of 3 and maximum of 6 or whatever it is. So it'll automatically increase the instance when the time is reached. So reactive scaling is very similar to, you know, you set it up in the same file as well. And there's a section called reactive rules. Oops, that's going really fast. And where you can go in and specify what performance counter to use, and when that threshold is hit, what is the action that you need to take. So that looks pretty, it looks like that. So you go in, you specify the same thing, you give it a rule, and you can also optionally give a description. And then say, when that operand, when the CPU is over 60% usage, can you scale it by a factor of 1? And same thing, you know, you can basically say scale down on low utilization. When the CPU is like under 30%, I want you to go -1. So notice that I've actually specified operand over here and said CPU. And what does that mean? I mean, how does it relate to a performance counter itself? And that's because you specify that in another section called operand. And you say performance counter, you create an alias, which is what is used in the previous screen over here. And then you got a bunch of settings. You can say that is the actual performance counter name. And you say, well, take an average in 5 minutes and use that to basically determine whether it needs to scale up or scale out or scale in. So there's a bunch of things that can actually go in the operand over here. You can have performance counters. You can actually use queue lengths. So if you're putting a lot of items in the queue and you know you see that it's queuing up, and then say, well, you know, there are about 15 items in the queue that are unprocessed. So maybe it's time to spin up another worker role to take care of it. We can do all those kind of things. Yes?
How much time would it take it
takes about roughly about 10 to 15 minutes before it is fire up, for a new instance to kick in. So that's why throttling is really important. That's a nice segue to my next slide, right? So throttling happens a lot quicker. So you can do that in combination. So you're looking at your CPU usage and go, it's like 80%, running at 80% at this point in time. So what I really want to do is I want to cut back some of the features. So you can go in and hide certain tabs or you know, non-paying customers. You know, you basically keep them out of the site or whatever you want to do. So the way you actually do that is you basically say operand CPU, you know, whatever threshold that you actually set, and then you say change setting, setting name, specify throttle and the target. Now, in your Azure application, you would have like your, you know, you go and set a bunch of configuration in it, right? This is the configuration that it actually affects. So, and I'll show you an example on how that all fits together. Now, there's also this what we actually call as a stabilization problem. So take the scenario, right? You pass a certain threshold and you increase the number of instances by one. And within a few minutes, you know, your CPU has gone below the threshold. And then you go, well, hey, well, the traffic is not in the site anymore, and let me just drop another instance, and you drop the instance again. And then after a while, again, within the next 5 minutes, it kicks in again and it starts going. So you got to start getting these oscillations happening in your site. Say you're increasing the instance and decreasing the instance and, you know, constantly going on. That's not probably a nice problem to have. It's probably better, and as you pointed out, you know, it takes about 15 minutes to fire up an instance. So it's probably not worth that effort at all, right? So there is a cooling off period that is available for you. And by default, I think it's about 15 minutes or so. So if nothing happens in 15 minutes, if it goes up or down, I'm not going to increase or decrease the number of instances. But you can actually change the setting, if you like. And again, so in the stabilizer, you can also basically go in and specify when to actually start scaling up and scaling down. This is the thing I was talking about earlier, because you know that in the last, you know, if you actually scale down, like 5 minutes into the hour, you're paying for the whole hour anyway. So you may as well say, well, you know, if it's scaled up, don't scale it down. So you can go and set settings over here that says, well, if it's already up in the first half an hour, don't scale it down. Or if it's, don't spin up a new instance if it's like 5 minutes left to go in the hour. Just wait for another 5 minutes to do it. So you can go and set all those things. Okay, so let's look at Wasabi in action now. Yes, you can specify your own actions and things like that, and your own operands if you like. And my mouse has just died. Okay, you may have to do without a mouse. So first thing you want to do is first thing you want to do is create a new worker role. So I'll go add a new worker role project. I will just call this auto scaling worker. Once I've done this, I'm going to start up my NuGet console and just basically say install package enterprise library Windows Azure Auto Scaling, and that'll basically bring in all the dependencies that I need to work in my application. So it brings in a number of things, including reactive framework, which is interesting. So here, like I said, there are four lines of code that I really need to add in, right? So I just go into autoscaler. And And then in my own start, I can basically say autoscaler equals enterprise library container. So Entelum basically comes with Unity, so I'm using that as a dependency injection framework over here as well. So it's all hooked onto that. I can also add in an override for on stop, and I can basically say autoscaler.stop. That's it. You know, those four lines that I was talking about, just added. Sorry, what is that? Didn't I add the start? I thought I did. Thanks for that. Now, if I go over to the config file, notice that if you've got the configuration, the Entelum configuration editor, and it'll automatically add that option for you. So I can just go ahead and click that. And you go into blocks and say add auto scaling settings. And it'll add the settings over here. By default, it actually adds all the blob rules and blob stores and things like that. You can change that to files if you want to. The first thing you would actually go and set, of course, is the storage account where it actually captures all the points, the data points that it needs to compute when to increase the instance and things like that. So I can go in over here. I'll just say use Windows as your storage emulator for now. But if you already had settings in your service configuration file, I can just go and give the connection string name over here as well. And this is the rule evaluation rate, like how frequently you actually look for these rules. If you go, you can go into the blob rules and then say, specify a name, or like a blob name where you're picking the rules from. I can just go and say rules.xml. And or you can also, for the service information, you do exactly the same thing. You can change to a local file service information store by doing that, and that'll change that as well. So instead of using a blob that uses a local file. So let me save that and close that. And go to my app.config file. Those are all the changes that it's actually made, you know, the auto-scaling configuration. I can actually see there's a lot of text in there. So that's why it's a lot better to use the configuration tool to set all those things up for you. Now, to actually see this running, I've already gotten... So there's an auto-scaling console application that I'm using so we can actually test this thing rather than, you know, run a worker role, spin it, put it up on the cloud and so on. It's exactly the same thing. It's got exactly the four same lines of code that I actually showed you earlier. It's you've got the auto-scaler there, start, and it stops when it finishes. The only difference over here is the service information store.xml and the rule store.xml file is complete. So let me walk you through that. The first thing on your service configuration, like a file, service information file, is details of your subscription. So you go ahead and put in what your subscription ID is, where the certificate is to talk to the subscription and things like that. And then you go ahead and say what the cloud service you're talking to is, and also the role that you want to change. You can set alias for this, so it's actually easier to use it in your rules file. Now, one thing I want to point out is there are certain options in your scaling mode. So you can basically go ahead and say scale, or you can say scale and notify, which means that whenever it's actually doing the scaling, it can also send you an email. And, you know, basically ask it to send me an email when this whole thing is done. I set up my storage accounts over here. And there are also a section over here for the stabilizer, which I've already explained to you earlier. So the rules.xml is a little bit more complex compared to that. Whole bunch of rules over here. I can give a rule and also a description. This rule basically says that at all times, I want to use a minimum of 3 and a maximum of 2. And also, during peak hours, which starts at 8 a.m. and lasts for like 10 hours, I want to use a minimum of 4 instances. So as soon as 8 a.m. hits, it's going to increase the number of instances from 3 to 4. So I've got a bunch of other rules over here. The first one is, these are the reactor rules. So I've set up something called throttle and unthrottle. And I've set up a queue and say if the queue length of the dummy text queue goes over 5, I want the throttling to kick in. I want to set the throttling parameter to false. And similarly, when it goes over 5, I wanted to set it to true. And when it goes under 5, I want to set it to false. Notice this. It's a very simple, easy to understand. You basically say when, and you say what action you need to perform as well. There's a whole bunch of, you get good IntelliSense as well. So you can say less than or equal to or greater or equal to and all those kind of things. Similarly, in my rules at the top over here, in my constraint rules, I get good IntelliSense. I can say, well, I want to do it every day of, like during weekdays. So I can say weekly and say days equals, see all those options there. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, whatever. Okay, so let's just quickly run this and see how this works. But before I do that, I've got an application already running in the cloud. Or I had it running. And it's got about 4 instances currently that are running. So what I want to do is I want to tweak the rules in my configuration file. I want to set it like, hey, don't go more than 3 or something like that. So it kind of like forces it to shut down one of the instances. So let's see how that actually works. So let me go over to my autoscaling app, go to my rules file, and I'm going to force it to say no more than 3 instances. Now, because this is ranked number 1, that will take priority over this other rule that actually says minimum of 4 and a maximum of 6. So that should actually kick in theory. So let me just run this app now. Takes about a few minutes for it to fire. And it takes a few minutes for it to fire up. And there it is running. And then it needs to notify Windows Azure to actually cut down, decrease the instance. So let's go in and have a look to see what the status is. Still evaluating the rule. I've got a log file over here that will get updated every time I've set logging up so that the rule actually kicks in and informs us of what's happening. Now, this may actually take a few seconds to kick in. While it does that, let me show you the application itself that I've got running. Now, this application that I have has got very little changes. There are 2 things that I'll actually point out. The first thing is that I've got all my, I've set up all the performance counters, things that I'm actually interested in. Now, by the way, how many of you actually use diagnostics.watt CFG file? Do you still set up your configuration in your web role or worker role, or do you use a separate file? Anyone just put it in your worker role, or do you have a separate file? Okay, no one's taking that question. I've seen a lot of people actually just do put it up in code. And I think this is probably a much preferred way of setting all these things up now. So put everything in your CFT file, and you don't have to worry about just going in and setting it up in code. So what I've done is I've set up all my performance counters and specified log transfer periods and things like that over here. So this is the first change that you need to do, is to include all your performance counters. The second thing that I've actually done is get my configuration setting for throttle, and then I've checked for it and said, well, if it's true, if throttling is on, I want to suspend all the CPU intensive tasks. Okay, it's basically a text, but you'll be in real world, you'd do something about it. Okay, so I'll run this app. It's called It's called auto scaling. So right now there are two items in the queue. So this, what it does is, if it goes over five items in the queue, throttling kicks in. Right now, load intensive tasks are running on the server because there are only two items in the queue. I can go ahead and just add a few more items. So that's over seven. So the next time the rule evaluator kicks in and starts evaluating and looks at the queue count and says, well, hey, the queue count is now over five, it'll basically send a message to our instance to change the value of throttling to true, okay? Meanwhile, let's go have a look to see what's happened with the log file. Notice that it actually says a rule has matched, and sent some stuff across the server to reduce the number of instances. Should have also sent me an email, which it hasn't as yet. Maybe it's not configured properly for that. But let's go look at. The instance count and see if it's actually kicked in. There you say it says the deployment is in transition. Roles are not running. So, well, what's happened now, it's probably already kicked that in. The next time we do a refresh in a few more minutes, you'll see one of those roles turning off. So let me jump back to my slide deck. And we'll come back and see what happened with, yes? It doesn't do any of that stuff. Let's see the one that it actually see the if an instance is actually firing up or down, you have like a cooling off period that it actually checks and doesn't change anything, right? But the throttling is slightly different to turning an instance back. It's a different action, so it doesn't care at that point. So I want to talk about transient errors. And how you handle them in Topaz. Now, the first thing I want to do is a bit of recap, right? I mean, you are running in shared infrastructure in the cloud. And like I said earlier, chances are that in a multi-tenant environment, you're running a database and it's running in a shared database infrastructure. Two people are making calls to the, not to, you know, multiple people are making calls to the database. Chances are that at some point in time, something's going to go wrong. And, a transient error may actually occur. If that happens, if you resubmit your query, it'll just work. So your application needs to be in a position to do that retry so you handle that error elegantly. So there are various places where some of these things can go wrong. I mean, database is one example. You know, it can happen in queues, it can happen in service buses. You know, if you're writing table storage, it can happen, right? And there are a number of examples of why some of these things can happen. You know, something's gone wrong in the infrastructure, or you know, you've got like a stale connection that you're using. So a number of things can actually go wrong. And if you look at the database errors alone, I mean, there's just heaps of stuff that you need to worry about. Those are the error conditions that you get, and you need to handle them. And you know, just writing scaling for the database is hard work. Just looking for all these error messages and saying, I'm going to code for this. Now, thankfully, what Topaz actually does for you is it will detect all these known transient errors and handle these errors. And when some of these errors actually occurs, it can actually do a retry for you. So it provides what is known as a retry strategy. And I'll talk about retry policy as well, like, you know, how often you retry and, you know, like how frequently you retry, so how many times and how frequently you retry. You can actually set that. In addition, the application blocks provides you with a number of classes and methods that helps you do the retry logic as well. So the installation is quite simple and straightforward. Again, you use a NuGet package to do the installation. You basically say install package, and you pass in the transient form handling string to it, and it'll download all the dependencies for you and do it. Again, you can use the Enterprise Library Configuration Editor, because it just makes life easy working with config files. Oops, this clicker is running ahead of me. And there's only one configuration, really. It's all about how often you retry and the retry policy. There are a bunch of... it's just jumping ahead of me all the time. Something's gone wrong. Okay.
See? I'm not even touching it.
Okay.
Keep on the right slide now. Okay.
So if you want...
Gotta switch this thing off.
It's all right. So you have a new class that's been introduced called the Reliable SQL Connection.
Thanks for that. Is it? Okay.
I'm not
sure. So they've introduced a new class called Reliable SQL Connection, and it takes you know, retry policy in there. So you can basically specify how often you want to retry and all those things in that. And there are a bunch of extension methods that have been added, most of them for SQL connection and some for IDB connection. So you can execute some of these queries with a retry policy.
So this is how a code really looks like. So instead of creating a new SQL connection, you basically create a reliable SQL connection, and you pass in a retry policy that basically says how often you need to do your retry. And then you can create, you use the connection to create a command. What's happening?
The key is probably stuck on this. Okay.
Anyway. And and you can basically do an execute scalar. Now, this command is basically an retry-aware command. So it actually works quite well.
Now the main thing, if you're using ORM, sorry.
Does it have integration with
Enterprise? I was going to get to that while the ghost letter keeps moving forward.
So, I mean, like, how many of you actually use ADO.NET? Anyone, how many of you are using ORMs? Okay, which is like a lot of people, right? And so when you're using ORMs, you've got a bit of issue. You cannot use some of the SQL connections that I was talking about in the previous screen.
Now, the SQL retry policy class itself has got a whole bunch of, there's got a methods in there. like the one that you're really interested in is something called execute action. What the execute action does is it takes a lambda. And with the retry policy in it, the retry policy already knows you know, how to apply the policy. It basically retries based on the policy. And you know, if you're basically returning something from an entity framework, link query, for example, you basically do execute query and that ion removal string that returns that data back. There are a couple of gotchas in this that you got to watch out. The first thing, of course, is you got to remember that link queries are actually enumerated when you do something like you know, like a two list or two array. And if you don't enclose that in this, if you don't enclose that in the block, you know, it will not do a retry. The other thing that you need to, the same thing goes for updates and deletes and so on. Unless you call save changes, you know, it doesn't actually hit the database. So you got to keep that in mind. That's just a ghost thing. I think the key is stuck over here or something like that. The other key important thing is try and avoid lazy loading in your code, okay? Because what happens is then you would have to kind of like wrap that in retry logic as well. So that's something that you need to be aware of. So let me quickly jump in and do a bit of demo. It's just moving by itself. So by the way, if you're interested, what happened in previously was you had this load intensive tasks were not running because we had only two items in the queue. Now that's basically kicked in, and they've been suspended until further notice. If I do this again, if I reduce the number of items in the queue, so we can come back to this later and see whether it started running again. Anyway, just back to my own code over here. A very simple example using ADO.NET. SQL connection, typically this is what you would do. You create a SQL connection and then you know, create a SQL command and basically do an execute scalar, right? It's pretty straightforward. But if you are doing it in using Topaz, what you can do is you can create a reliable SQL connection, and then you do a create command, and you got an execute scalar with retry over here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to run this, and I've got a breakpoint over here, right? Just before I'm executing the scalar, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go over to SQL Server and turn it off. And if I do run now, it's still turning off when I actually hit that, I think. Let me try this again. Start. Just before it's executing the scalar, I'm just going to go over and turn off SQL Express. Hit F10 now. It's basically thrown an exception. And what I'm actually doing is I'm just swallowing the exception, just putting something to the console and swallowing it. But let me just go back and enable this. And see what happens with the retry application block in place. F10.
10. So I've created the command over here. And just before I'm executing the retry, I'm going to go shut it down. It shut down. Now, if I hit F10, it's going to take a lot longer to execute this this statement, because I'm just about to hit F10 now. I just hit F10. It's taking a lot longer to execute it. If I go back over to SQL Azure, to SQL Server, and enable it up again, notice that it's actually come back now. Say the retry policy is basically kicking in. It's waiting, and then it's refiring it. It all happens in the background, so you don't have to worry about wiring up all the retry logic. So I've got something, the link to SQL sample, which is pretty similar, except that there's a slight difference in the way it's, you basically initialize a retry policy, and I've said, well, use the SQL Azure transient detection strategy. And then notice that I've put everything into a Lambda over here. So execute action and put everything in Lambda. So whatever is in the Lambda will basically get retried when a failure actually happens. Let's go in and see if still throttled. Thought I would have done, triggered it by now. Anyway, so that's moving on to my slides again. Just want to recap. I kind of I gave you an introduction to scaling, and you know, we spoke about the two different ways of scaling itself, how you can actually reactively scale and how you can proactively scale as well. And I introduced you to Wasabi, which is basically an application of law from the Patterns and Practices group. It's part of Enterprise Library. You can install it, and it does a lot of work for you. So the way you go about it is basically create a worker role. And in the worker role, like I said, there's literally four lines of code that you need to plug in. Once you plug in those four lines, the rest of the work is taken care of in the configuration files. So in your configuration files, you can go ahead and set up some set of constraint rules. You can go ahead and set up some reactive rules as well. The one thing that I mentioned, of course, you need to get the NuGet package out. There, the ghost light is moving again, without my intervention. And I also spoke about Topaz, which allows you to handle transient errors quite well. And again, you need to go and install a NuGet package for doing this. And you can specify a retry strategy in your configuration files. And once you do that, you know, the code to do it is pretty straightforward. There's, you know, the SDK provides like a reliable SQL connection that you can actually use that will do the retry automatically when you're getting a connection. And similarly, you know, there are some extension methods to IETB command that have been added. So if you want to do an execute scalar or, you know, do all those kind of commands to get data back from the database, they will do it, and it'll automatically retry. So you also have a method called execute action. That's part of the retry policy, and you know, you can use it for other things, like including ORM. So that's it. If you've got any questions, I'll take them now. Yep.
With the Topaz.
Yep. Yes, it will work with regular SQL Server as well. Yeah. So I'm going to give away for a few T-shirts and stuff like that. So if you've got any questions, you go. All right. I'll had a couple of questions. There you go. Are we done? Any more questions, guys? Yeah. All right. What? Oh, that's right. Oops.
Run down the whole building.
All right, thanks, guys.